Okay, well, welcome everyone to this CIDR session. As I mentioned at the last session, there's been some changes to our schedule. This year, as CIDR and the CNIE have worked out compatible schedules so that our members can enjoy the presentations offered by both of the associations. In the future, all CIDR presentations will take place on the first Wednesday of the month, while the CNIE's Wise and Witty Wednesdays will take place on the third Wednesday of the month. As always, the CIDR sessions will be recorded and available from the CIDR site. In addition to the Illuminate recording, an MP3 recording and the PowerPoint slideshow will be posted below the description of the presentation. I'm going to post that link to the CIDR site in the text box, so if you need that, it should be there. There you go. Okay, now I'd like to introduce today's presenter, Dr. Wayne McIntosh from the Commonwealth of Learning. Wayne is an education specialist focusing on e-learning and ICT policy for the COL. Prior to this position, Wayne was associate professor and founding director of the Center for Flexible and Distance Learning at the University of Auckland. He has extensive experience in the theory and practice of open and distance learning. Before moving to New Zealand, he spent 11 years working at the University of South Africa, which is a distance learning institution and, as you may know, one of the world's mega universities. He's participated in a range of international consultancies and projects, including work for the COL, the International Monetary Fund, UNESCO, and the World Bank. Wayne also serves as a member of the editorial board for Open Learning and publishes regularly in the field of flexible and distance learning. He's a committed advocate and user of free software for education, and in recent years, Wayne has been responsible for the establishment of WikiEducator, which he is here to discuss today. So welcome, Wayne. We're really thankful that you were able to find time out of your very busy schedule and join us here today. So I'll turn the microphone over to you now.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you very much for the introduction, and you know, hi to everyone else. Today you're going to have me speaking about a project which unquestionably has been the most rewarding project of my entire career. I have to say I feel a little daunted speaking with the leading research community of open distance learning in Canada and further afield, and I hope you will permit me one or two transgressions. You see, I'm standing outside the academy for a short while, and I hope that you afford me a few transgressions vis-a-vis research traditions. I mean, I guess one of the challenges we're facing with the open education resource movement is the fact that it is a burgeoning field, and we don't have a large empirical base or history from which to draw. But I guess the fact that we don't have a database on the future is not an excuse or validation that the future is not going to happen. So just a caveat by way of introduction. The title of my presentation, I Return to the Traditions of the Academy, is really a play on something my good friend Gary Miller, who's now retired from the world campus of Penn State University, always talks about. And that is the issue that if you really want to start a revolution in higher education, you need to call it a return to tradition. So I'm going to play a little bit with that theme in the presentation today. I also, with all my talks, I give a health warning before I start speaking. As Lynn mentioned, I am a free software user. And if you do suffer from hypertension, it's best that you listen to me under parental supervision. And, you know, while I'm talking, if you find yourself hyperventilating because I'm not mentioning your favorite non-free proprietary software tool, just relax, take a deep breath, and you'll get over it. The issue is that at the end of the presentation, if you come to me and say, you know, Wayne, that was a really cool piece of software you were using, I don't want to be faced with the ethical dilemma of refusing to help a friend by giving a copy without restrictions in order to adhere to copyright law. So with that caveat, let me move ahead. As Lynn mentioned, I work for the Commonwealth of Learning, and as many of you know, this is an international agency that was set up by the Commonwealth Heads of Government. Our Chief Executive Officer is Sir John Daniel, who's well known in distance education circles. And I have to compliment the Commonwealth of Learning for the foresight in taking on a very bold project, setting up an international wiki for the development of open education resources. And there's some remarkable similarities between our practice of open distance learning and what we are trying to do in moving this OER agenda forward. And the parallels, of course, with the innovations of the course team approach for course development and how we're implementing these within the OER arena. WikiEducator is really a project about turning the promise of open education resources into today's reality. And I think it is very, very important for the open education resource movement to actually get it right. We are facing a couple of tough challenges in education as we move forward. And as you well know, there's a very fine balance between doing things right and doing the right thing. And throughout WikiEducator's history, in all the major decisions we've had to face and tackle, I'd have to say that we've swayed on doing the right things around choice of license and the approaches that we're using. Just an opening question for the group. I'd be keen to hear your thoughts on what you think the greatest challenge facing the future of education is today. So I'm keen to open up the floor and just get a few thoughts from the community on this issue. Just to say that I am reading the chat box and taking in the feedback. Clearly, there are a lot of points being made around technology and the effective use of technology and its relationship with pedagogy, ease of use of technology, of course, education for all. Okay. From my side, I think one of the challenges facing education today has to be around sustainability for a number of reasons. I mean, we've already seen contributions around access to education, and when we look at the planet, 4 billion of the world's 6 billion people are underserved educationally. And when we start contrasting that to the traditional, tertiary education system, the graphic I've got there on the screen attempts to plot the rise in fees of or tuition fees of public universities in North America, well, in the U.S., against the consumer price index. And certainly for the last 15 to 20 years, we've seen a rapid increase in the cost of education against the normal consumer price index. And if you look at a system like that, that system is fundamentally not sustainable. So, I mean, it's an interesting challenge which I think we're going to be facing in the next couple of years at a planetary level. And if we just think about environmental sustainability, the fact of the matter is we're effectively running out of planet, and I think we are going to need to get a lot smarter in how we do things. So the big driving force behind the work we're doing in the open education resource movement is to start thinking a lot smarter around how we can start saving costs and improving the quality of education. And those of us working in the distance learning and asynchronous learning environments know that the most significant cost factor of what we do in producing high quality learning materials lies in the academic time that is invested in those resources. So the value proposition around open education resources is pretty straightforward, and it makes a lot of sense that by dividing up and sharing the costs of development through the use of open education resources that are openly licensed, that we can reuse, remix, and redistribute without restrictions, does make a lot of sense. And this is the major driving force behind what we are doing in the Open Education Resource Movement. So a little bit about WikiEducator. It is a very bold project. Our mission is to turn the digital divide into digital dividends using free content and open networks. The project was started early in 2006, and just over 2.5 years have gone by, and we've already been voted the best educational wiki by Stephen Downs. We've been very fortunate in receiving the inaugural an award from Merlo from the Merlo Africa Network for our work in the use of open source technology in the development of OERs. But I guess the interesting question is, how does a project like WikiEducator move from this, which were the early days of the project, to being one of the fastest growing educational wikis in the world? And I'm not sure if you can see that on the screen, but this was one of the very early screen dumps of the WikiEducator project. And we were essentially a tabula rasa, a blank wiki when we started, and we simply had a statement on the front page which said, this is an open project and we've adopted the open source philosophy of releasing early and frequently. So you'll find lots of room for improvement and you won't find much content on the site at this stage of the project. The structure and resources on the site will evolve according to user needs. Be patient and we'll get there. And that's basically how we started. And I've often spent a lot of time thinking about how this all works. And I think a lot of this has to do with the principles of self-organization. You'll be familiar with the phenomenal work of Emmanuel Castells around the network society and his observations that network systems don't have a center or a hierarchy, but yet have the inherent capacity to self-organize. Now, I'm not a physicist or biologist, but I understand that self-organization is something that these folk studied. But what I find particularly interesting around the biological research around self-organization is that the rules specifying the interactions among these systems and components are executed at the local level without reference to the global pattern. And we've seen a lot of this happening in the WikiEducator community. It is an open project, and we have communities organizing around their needs in terms of taking the project forward. This is a slide which highlights and documents our strategic plan. For those of you that have worked in nonprofit agencies will be familiar with the results-based management framework and things like log frames, and the graphic in front of you is in fact a log frame, which is a high-level summary of the strategic plan of the project. You'll see on the right-hand side of the screen, those are the outcomes which we are trying to achieve. That is, how are we going to reduce costs of education, how can we improve quality, and how can we widen access through an open peer collaboration model of open education resources. And since the onset of the project, we have targeted the development of a sustainable OER ecosystem. And our strategy is built on four legs, in fact. First and foremost, building community, building community, building community. And we do this in three ways, by building capacity among educators all over the world in how to use these technologies effectively. We develop a lot of OER content on actually how to develop OERs. And most importantly, strategic connections. And these strategic connections operate at two levels. One, it's the strategic connections we have with the open source software community in the refinement of technologies that we use, but also the strategic relationships between educators across the planet. And the strategic plan has been phased into three distinctive phases. And our first phase was setting up the foundations, getting the servers up and running, getting the tutorials developed, the help tutorials in how, that help to build capacity. And the second phase of the project is focused on scaling up operations, and our flagship project, which I'll talk a little bit about, is the Learning for Content project. And we're now slowly moving into phase three of the project, which is sustainable implementation. So a little bit of background in terms of how the project is put together. I think it's important to reflect a little on how well we're doing. As I mentioned, the project was established in May 2006. We run an optional survey with all new account holders where we track some demographic information and ask folk, you know, why they join our family. And we've got a bit of a sense of who our wiki educators are. So I'd like to provide a little bit of feedback about the project and its growth. This is a graph of our cumulative site visits. This isn't website hits. These are real warm-blooded individuals that come to WikiEducator. And you'll see that our first million visits took us 19 months to achieve, whereas our second million took us 5 months. So we're very happy with the growth of the project as we're moving forward. The age distribution of our wiki educators, and for me this was a big surprise, more than half of our educators joining the wiki educator project are over 45 years old. And I was kind of expecting, you know, sort of 22 and 23 year old web junkies, you know, immersed in social software that would be joining the community. And we are very pleased that we're getting a very representative spread of educators around the world. In terms of the roles of the folk that are joining the project, by far the majority of people joining WikiEducator are working in the formal education system. 72% are either teachers, lecturers, or trainers. In terms of our spread across the sectors, about half from the tertiary education sector. And if I do some quick math, it looks about, you know, 24-25% from the K-12 sector. WikiEducator is a project that is focusing on working across all sectors, and clearly we need to be doing quite a bit of work in furthering participation from the K-12 or the school sector. In terms of, you know, why folk join WikiEducator, you'll see the vast majority are joining the project to explore new ideas and trends at 71%. But what I'm particularly happy about is that, you know, almost the same number of people are joining the project to learn wiki skills and, to learn how to participate in social networks. And, of course, that a vast majority of our educators are joining the project with the purpose of developing free content, the purpose of developing open education resources. This is very, very exciting. In many respects, this is an important return to the values and tradition of education, and that is to share knowledge freely. Our gender distributions, roughly half-half. We're particularly happy with the impact of the Learning for Content project, which is a capacity-building initiative, which has done much to rectify the gender bias we had before launching Learning for Content. This is a very interesting graphic. We use the MediaWiki software engine, which is an open source wiki, and in fact it's the same wiki software that is used by the Wikimedia Foundation projects, who oversee Wikipedia, Wikibooks, Wikispecies, and other wiki projects. And what this enables us to do, apart from benefiting from collaborations we have with the Wikimedia Foundation on the technology side, it affords us the ability to actually use the same scripts for tracking statistics in the wiki. And what this graph shows is it shows the spread of edits within the community, and basically how this graphic works is almost everybody would have more than one edit by virtue of registering an account on the wiki. And then we start moving across in terms of the percentage of users and the number of edits. And what is very, very interesting is that the red line is a wiki educator's line, that for a large component of the project, WikiEducator is in fact, relatively speaking, more productive than Wikipedia in terms of its content production. We're very excited about this because, I mean, part of our work and how we're approaching our strategy has been focused on achieving improving productivity. In terms of general statistics, roughly about 3% of the registered users in Wikipedia generate 80% of the content in the project, compared with WikiEducator, where roughly about 12% of our registered users produce 80% of the content. And we're working hard on finding ways in how we can actually increase this. I need to talk a little bit about how the project is governed. When I set up WikiEducator, I made a very early commitment to the community that WikiEducator would become a community project governed by the community. And in the early days, we set up an interim international advisory group to help steer the project until the point that we reached 2,500 registered users. And at that point, we had agreed to hold an open election to elect folk to assist with the governance of the project. So taking into account our targets, around 2,500 registered users for setting up a community governance model, the red line there shows my predicted trends of growth in Cole's strategic plan for WikiEducator. And we predicted that we'd reach 2,500 registered users by June 2009. And this was quite an informed decision because I've had the opportunity of leading other open source projects and drew the data on those figures. The green graph there shows our actual growth over this period of time. And as you can see, we've far outstripped our predictions around growth. The target of 2,500 registered users was achieved 18 months in advance of the scheduled plan. So we had to do quite a bit of work in getting a governance structure in place. There are, of course, a number of interesting challenges when we are dealing with the setting up of governance structures. The Commonwealth of Learning, of course, is a Commonwealth agency, and we subscribe to the Commonwealth values of the Harare Declaration, which include things like good governance, democracy, respecting freedom of speech, and so on. So when putting a governance structure together, we had to start thinking about, well, how do we ensure democratic participation and regional representation across the world's countries when using an open voting model? What are the issues around non-Commonwealth countries being voted to the board, which is an interesting challenge? What are the challenges around should the election end up with a biased board in terms of gender? So there are all these issues around setting up a governance structure. And I'd like to reflect a little on what WikiEducator did in terms of tackling this challenge. We were also very, very fortunate in having hindsight and experience from the Wikimedia Foundation projects in terms of the challenges that the Wikimedia Foundation faced in setting up their own governance structures. And essentially, we did our best to learn from their mistakes. The proposal that came up from the community, which was discussed and the policies developed, was the establishment of a WikiEducator Community Council. And basically how this council works is that there are 15 elected members that are democratically elected by the community in accordance with the policy and procedures that the community developed. It is then up to these 15 elected members to nominate 10 additional members onto our community. And what we are attempting to address here are any imbalances we may have in terms of distribution or gender or these challenges, but also to have a look at the skills gaps we might have within our community in terms of taking a big project like this forward. And I am happy to announce roughly about a week and a half ago, the first elections were concluded, and we have successfully elected 15 officials from the community. I have to say that I had many sleepless nights over this because as a policy we had decided to have 15 elected members contest the election, and my big stress factor was around, are we going to find 15 people in the community to put up their hands to contest the election? And I'm happy to say that 20 folk put up their hands from the community, and we had a good election. We had a chief electoral officer that was appointed by the community who oversaw the election, and it is really an impressive process, and all the discussions and documentation around this are on the wiki. Examples of wiki-educated projects, in the early days it was pretty easy for me to list a couple of examples. But as the project has grown, it's very difficult to select projects. So I've just pulled out one or two projects which I thought may be of interest for this particular group. The first one being the Open Education Resource Handbook. This was a project that was initiated by the Center for Open and Sustainable Learning at Utah State University. And the task being to develop a simple handbook for teachers and educators in tertiary education around the design, development, and distribution of open education resources. And the team at COSOL decided to develop the handbook on Wikieducator. But it's a very, very interesting example, because what we saw evolving with this particular project was the approach of using a course team development approach, which we are very familiar with in the open distance learning environment, in terms of how this this handbook was actually developed. We had a primary author based in Utah. I commissioned a second author in Africa, because obviously this handbook has huge potential in the developing world in helping educators engage in the OER fields, and I wanted to make sure that the developing society perspectives were adequately represented in the OER handbook. And so I appointed a leading OER thinker in South Africa, a chap by the name of Kim Tucker, who was working from South Africa. I did a little bit of work here from Vancouver around some of the learning design and structural aspects of the handbook. We had a graphic designer who was based in New Zealand who sourced a range of free content images for inclusion in the text. And I mean, this is the neat thing about the wiki approach, is that we're able to constitute these development teams to produce high quality materials. And the OER handbook is also an important example, because the text is available on lulu.com, which is our first example in Wikieducator of how free content can be developed into a commercial publication. The black and white version of this handbook is available at lulu.com for just short of $20. But at the same time, there will always be a free version of this text available on Wikieducator. So there are a couple of interesting issues, and I hope we can get and do a little bit of chatting around the questions of the non-commercial restriction, which for us is a serious limitation of the free content movement, because we do not believe we have the rights to refuse someone the right to to earn a living. What I also want to point out, and I think this is going to be quite significant for Wikieducator's future, is a technology that we have in the wiki. It is possible for you to build a customized collection of any number of pages within the wiki and produce a print version of the course materials that are developed in Wikieducator. And this is pretty important within the developing world, because by far the vast majority of learners we are trying to serve across the Commonwealth do not have connectivity. And so strategically, Wikieducator has spent a lot of energy focusing on, well, how do we use these cutting-edge technologies in ways that are going to be appropriate for the developing world. I'm also happy to say that we have recently completed a beta version building on top of this technology that will enable you to produce a document in the open document format. We've also got an impressive proof of concept where any customized collection that you build in WikiEducator can be exported or packaged as an IMS content cartridge, which would then give you the ability to import into any learning management system that supports these interoperability specifications. As I mentioned, we will be implementing an export to the open document format. And the power of this, of course, is that you will be able to download an offline version to work in your word processor on your desktop. So we're very excited about that development. A very interesting project is the Learning for Content project. It's a very ambitious project. We started this at the beginning of this year, in January. We also received generous funding from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation for this project. And the aim of the project is to train 2,500 educators across the world in the use of these technologies by the end of December. At the moment, we're roughly about halfway through our targets, and the project is now scaling exponentially. It is really an amazing project, and I would also just like to indicate that we do offer a free online training session every month. So if any of you who'd want to join us or have friends and family that want to learn how to use wikis, please come along and join us. It's a neat project. The deal is we'll provide you with free training, and we ask folk to pay for their training by donating a little of their knowledge back to the community by developing a lesson or some resource that they can use in their own context. A little feedback from some of the personalities in our community who have gone through the Learning for Content program. The first guy there, Victor Mensa from Zambia, he's a Ghanaian national, and he joined our first Learning for Content workshop. And you can see he's really been taken back by what WikiEducator is doing. It's not only groundbreaking; its foresight is defining history and must forever be developed and continued. And after the first workshop, Victor went on to organize a training session for Zambia, where in his first session he had 22 educators and trained them in the Wiki approach using our free tutorials. He's now just recently completed a second session where he trained over 60 educators working across two computer labs. It's just phenomenal to see the growth that's taking place in Zambia. Nelly Deitch, she was a graduate of our third Learning for Content workshop. And Nelly at the moment is currently running a Learning for Content workshop in Israel with over 90 participants, I believe. Nelly was also put up our hand and offered her services to be the chief electoral officer for our elections. The work of Anil Prasad in India is also phenomenal. He regards WikiEducator as his second home. He spends all his weekends and his vacation time working on WikiEducator, developing content. And we were able to make use of Anil's skills and services in a Learning for Content workshop in Sri Lanka. So it's just amazing to see how the principles of self-organization are unfolding in the project. So what about sustainability? Last week at the Open Education Conference in Utah, we made an important public announcement relating to the future of WikiEducator. One of the things that we've noticed within the community is the issue that we have capability phases. There are clear, distinctive phases that the community has been going through, and these relate to the phases of the strategic plan. And at each transition from one phase to the next, there are always these areas of tension. So, from the beginning, setting up the foundations, how we scale up content development through our capability development, and the third phase that we're moving into now is how do we achieve a sustainable project. the big challenge that we are going to face at this point in the evolution of our history is the question of quality, but also the question of economic sustainability of the project. So taking a look at the quality issues, Wiki Educator is distinctive from the other open education resource projects in a number of ways. First of all, we are a peer collaboration model of OER content development, unlike the vast majority of OER projects which tend to be producer-consumer models. We believe that the peer collaboration model is the only model that is going to be able to scale up content development if we are hoping to achieve free content resources for all levels and all sectors across the planet. Of course, the question of quality is very, very important in education and is equally important in open content development as it is in closed content developments. And there is a close relationship between the capability of individuals and institutions in terms of using these technologies, in terms of their knowledge and skill of pedagogy and so forth, and the quality of teaching resources. One of the challenges we are trying to address, and this is something we've observed in the Wikimedia Foundation projects, if you look at the Wikipedia project, you will see that the community's capability has grown over time. And anybody today who tries to start an article in Wikipedia will know about the challenges that I'm speaking about. Within a minute or so, your page will be deleted and you'll be having tags put on your page that doesn't meet this policy and it doesn't meet that requirement and so forth. And the real challenge, of course, is, well, how do you build capability in parallel with the development of quality within the project? And the approach that we're taking in Wiki Educator is to recognize that we should be using a tiered approach to quality. Our philosophy in Wiki Educator is, just try it. Our community will support you. And we want to continue to support educators at all levels of capability within the project, but at the same time implement processes that will be incentives and contribute to the quality of the work that we're doing. And as we speak, there's a project within Wiki Educator that is actually building the quality assurance framework and review framework for the project. And we've also observed very, very different capability phases, individual educators go through when they join these Wiki projects. Typically in the beginning, folk get started and they try to get the main focus is to get the head around Wiki skills, just leave me alone, I want to figure out how to use this Wiki. And then folks start developing their own content, and the approach there is very often developing content on their own user page, and please leave my content alone, I don't want anybody collaborating with me on this content, this is my content and I'm developing it for my purpose. And then after a while, the third phase that folk go through is then they start asking, hey, nobody's collaborating with me on my content. And then the penny drops, you ask yourself the question, well, hey, if nobody is collaborating, have I collaborated on anybody else's content? And so the community grows. And what we're trying to do is to have our quality assurance processes aligned with these capability phases. So the initial starting point there would be your drafts of your personal teaching resources, that every educator will be free to develop their own teaching materials, which can, of course, be of very, very high quality, but also may not be. Developing content is a reiterative process. Then we will implement what we call a Wiki Educator featured resource, which will be a community process where the community expresses a value judgment on the quality of the resource, the next level being a Wiki Educator featured collaboration. And the highest level of quality review within our community will be the traditional peer-reviewed resource. And we have technologies in the Wiki that will enable us to implement classical peer review, and what this technology essentially does, it will give you the user the ability to distinguish between peer-reviewed versions and the latest production version of content simply by, you know, clicking on a button. So this is pretty exciting. At this stage, I want to just hold off a little and get into some discussion and looking forward to some interactions. But a brief overview of the project and where we're going.
Hi, Wayne. It's Terry. Well, thanks for that overview and congratulations on your work and the success of Wiki Educator. I'm a huge fan of OER repositories. I guess the biggest challenge that I've seen over the years, in the beginning with learning object repositories years ago, and I think that the Hewlett Foundation funded projects around the world are succeeding in getting content produced, you know, some of it in single author style and some collaboratively. But I think the hardest issue is maybe the most surprising is the lack of evidence of anybody using the material, or not anybody, but, you know, significant numbers of people. And I noticed that you had the slide earlier where you had a why people were joining Wiki Educator, and there was nobody there who was signing up in order to use or to acquire content. But maybe that number was just people who were intending to author. I'm not sure. But in any case, the wider issue is, you know, are you measuring use, or do you think that it's a build it and they shall come, that people will actually use it, or do you have doubts about that whole issue?
Hi, Terry. A very good question. And I think you're right. One of the biggest challenges that the open education resource movement is going to face will be around this reuse issue. We are beginning to see evidence of reuse. And in fact, the OER handbook is actually a very good example of that. 30% of that handbook, roughly, was other open content materials that were reused for this particular production. So, I mean, that is promising. I think what we're going to be seeing is the impact of free content licensing in the ability to reuse. And I mean, it is a complex topic. I mean, we're all familiar with the, you know, outside expert syndrome and versus the not invented here syndrome in most of the academy. And I think the distinguishing feature that we have with the open education movement, certainly with those projects that subscribe to the free cultural works definition, is the freedom that is embedded in the licensing of the materials. In other words, that folk are free to adapt and modify without restriction. Folk are free to put their own branding on the content resources. Folk are free to, you know, which I think is going to make a big difference. The question of reuse is not a trivial question, you know, all the complexities around culture and so forth. But what we're seeing emerging within Wiki Educator at the moment are the principles of self-organization. By far the vast majority of folk that are using Wiki Educator for real teaching in real courses around the world are developing materials for their own use. And by having them open, we are seeing projects collaborating across countries now. I mean, a good example is a nursing course that was developed on HIV/AIDS in New Zealand at Otago Polytechnic, which is now being reused and built upon through a big project in Ghana around community nursing. So we are seeing early evidence, but my suspicion is that adherence to the principles of freedom are going to make a big contribution to reuse in the future. I must say I haven't been good at keeping track of what's going on in the chat box. So, I mean, if there's a pressing question that I've just missed here, please feel free to take up the mic.
Hello, this is Paul Little here. Hopefully I can be heard okay. I'm not sure if my mic is okay. I'm really similar to Terry, a real supporter of OER as well, and I think it has an incredible amount of potential. And in point of fact, I think it is the direction that society will be heading towards. But I think some of the lag in its ongoing use, or it is a lag. It's not an ultimate denial of it, but I think that we're used to a distribution system through textbooks or through institutions for accredited materials. We almost assume if it comes from Harvard, it's accredited, if it comes from, or it's recognized, or it's quality. or if it comes from an established publisher, that there's been some vetting process. I think OER resources are going to have to go through a period of ongoing sustainable quality production to be eventually accepted. And in that sense, it's like any other market. If a new publisher came on the market, came into business tomorrow, it would take a while for them to establish the market credibility to be actually be picked up. I think another issue is similar to other open projects, whether it's FreeNet or whether it was Further Ed Councils in Alberta or similar things in the United Kingdom, the accreditation process is ultimately what many students are looking for. And once OER's resources have some accreditation behind them or associated with them, I think that then there will be a greater pickup in those materials. Those are my observations.
Hi, I think you're very right. The challenges of quality and accreditation are big challenges for the movement. Just two interesting brief reflections. I think what is pretty neat around the open education resource movement is the fact that the control of this future, the open education resource future, lies in the hands of the academic. We are the folk who can take the decisions around what is quality, how we're going to implement quality, through the control of our own copyright. And I think this is very, very exciting, because what is happening now is the control of knowledge and knowledge production is, you know, coming back into the hands of the folk where it belongs. I mean, to participate in a project like Wiki Educator or any one of the other open education resource projects at an individual level, we don't need any permission from anybody to do this. And that's terrible. I mean, that's very, very exciting. Accreditation, of course, is a big issue. And, you know, I mean, I don't see any substantive changes around accreditation per se. I mean, we don't accredit textbooks. What we accredit is the learning and the token value of a credential at an institution. And thinking back to my own sort of studies and career, I have yet to base a decision to enroll at any institution based on the prescribed textbooks that are used by the institution. So, you know, just an interesting thought and reflection as we move forward in, you know, developing these sustainable futures, yeah. But important issues, yeah.
Hi, Wayne. I was just curious, you had mentioned earlier about right now there being a lack of production and use at the preschool and K to 12 areas. I'm wondering what activities you might be looking into to increase use and production at those levels.
Multiple strategies that we're thinking about. One of which is we're thinking of how we might be able to work a lot closer to the Open High School initiative that David Wiley has started at in the state of Utah. And this is essentially a new school, K-12 school secondary phase, that has been set up that aims to be run entirely on open education resources, which in fact is supported by the local government in Utah. And similarly, we will be working with, you know, other national education ministries in finding ways to actually support OER in the K-12 sector. I mean, we've got a couple of early sort of champions and wonderful examples. There's this amazing little school based in New Zealand called Warrington School, and it is a rural school, and I need to tell folk that the digital divide is live and well in New Zealand. This is a small little rural school. It has 30 pupils and three teachers, it's a full primary school. What is interesting in a country like New Zealand is that more than half the schools in New Zealand are of this caliber. And I mean, these schools just don't have the money or resources to teach effectively. And the open education movement shows huge potential in fostering collaboration and promoting quality. So, I mean, these are the kinds of things that we will be focusing on. I mean, it's a classic open source approach. You know, we scratch itches. So, I mean, we try and home in on the needs. And my suspicion is you know, through the principles of self-organization, we will get better in the K-12 sector. But I mean, there's also a lot happening in the K-12 sector around the open education resource movement. It's really about, you know, I mean, and this is one of the challenges we face in the OER movement. You know, at the moment we've got these silos, and OER projects aren't very good at this point in time in collaborating with each other. But there are a couple of technical issues sitting in there, but these are one of the things we hope to work on in the future.
Well, thank you for that. I'm still just astounded how often I was a K-12 teacher many years ago, and as a parent now, I'm astounded how often my children come home with pages photocopied out of textbooks and so forth still, or the number of times I'm asked to pay out of pocket for additional resources and so forth that I know are available freely on the web. But as Terry said, people just aren't going there to look for it for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I think that's where we, you know, the advocates of the, you know, the freedom culture need to work a lot harder in terms of the advocacy work that we're doing. We're making good progress. Reflecting on this movement, I mean, I'm astounded at how much progress we've actually made in such a short time. You know, for me, it's no longer a question of if this is going to happen; it's more a question of when. We're going to achieve our objectives, but I do think we need to be working a lot harder on advocacy, and you know, just informing people. I mean, the ignorance around copyright and what it means, and the choices we have available today is worrying. So, I mean, it's something that we spend a lot of time working on ourselves as well. I see there's a question on how does WikiEducator get financial support. The technical infrastructure of WikiEducator is funded by the Commonwealth of Learning, and the Commonwealth of Learning has incubated the WikiEducator project. We are now moving on to our next phase of development, which is, you know, phase three of our operations, which is to achieve sustainability. And the reality is WikiEducator has in fact outgrown its home here at the Commonwealth of Learning. And as of May next year, we are going to be launching an international open education resource center, which will be housed at Otago Polytechnic in New Zealand. And Otago Polytechnic in New Zealand is a very interesting institution. They are, in fact, the world's first tertiary education institution to adopt a blanket Creative Commons attribution license as part of the official intellectual property policy. The Commonwealth of Learning will continue to fund the technical infrastructure of WikiEducator for the next 3 years. And part of what I'm going to be doing is spending a lot of time working on building sustainability models around WikiEducator. I mean, working with the, you know, the Red Hat Linux type of model in terms of how we can build services and around the free content movement. We will be generating multiple income streams, some of which will be membership contributions to help support the infrastructure of WikiEducator. So if you're an institution and keen to get on board and involved with this, please do get in touch with me. We're in the processes of looking for, you know, founding organizations around a membership contribution model. We're also looking very creatively around how we can harness stronger partnerships between the publishing industry and the open education resource movement, and how we can build models that can start sustaining income streams for a big project like this. I have to say that it is in fact a very cheap project to run. The efficiencies around using Wiki technology are phenomenal. Last week I was looking at a presentation at Open Education, which is trying to build a sustainable project, and their break even for the little work that they were doing was $800,000 US. And I can tell you that the break even for the Wiki Educator project in terms of its next phase of development is more around the region of $300,000. I mean, that's basically what it costs to run a project of this size. So and that would take our full-time equivalents that are working on the project from currently 0.9. I mean, this whole project is run in terms of full-time equivalents by 0.9 people, just below one person. Of course, I mean, we need to take into account the thousands of hours that educators across the planet actually put into the project, and which is the main force of this project. But in terms of sort of operations to keep the thing going, we're a very lean machine. So effectively, the next phase of development is going to be looking at sort of doubling our FTE outputs to 1.8 and then continuing to support the project. So I hope that answers the question around sustainability. Yeah. Terry, I see there's a question of Canadians elected. In terms of elected members, we have one Canadian on the board, a gentleman by the name of Randy Fisher. Obviously the full board hasn't been constituted yet. There are still nominated members which the elected members need to take decisions on. So there may be more Canadian representation in the future. Looks like we're running out of time. I do want to say thank you for the opportunity for sharing a few thoughts about the project, and I extend an open invitation to each and every one of you to get involved with the project. It's an amazing project. It also comes with a health warning. Be very careful. Wiki Educator is quite addictive.
Well, thanks. Jamie Rossiter had a question. I think we have time for at least one question. Go ahead, Jamie.
Okay. Thanks very much for the presentation. I think this is a really important area. I guess my question really ties in a little bit with some of the earlier ones, and that is that although content is a necessary aspect of education, it's usually not sufficient. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about how to move beyond the content conundrum, which I think this is a major contribution to how to provide education in a way that builds upon some of these same kind of principles.
Absolutely, Jamie. I mean, content is just one component of the equation, and an important component, but certainly not the full spectrum of the kinds of things that educators should be doing. Wiki Educator is not in any way trying to replace all the facets and interactions of educator of education in any way. Our focus is on one facet of that whole process. But that said, there are a number of very interesting projects emerging and some very progressive pedagogies, if you will, around teaching and learning using Wiki models. And I'd encourage you to go and have a look at some of the courses that Otago Polytechnic are working with, where they use the Wiki as a basis for helping to outline the curriculum and specify the interactions that take place. Individual learners are each responsible for setting up their own blogs, for reflecting on the courses. It's really an impressive pedagogy. What I find exciting as well, and there are a number of these sort of models emerging around the world. David Wiley's work, Stephen Downs and George Siemens now, their course, the work that Otago Polytechnic is doing, where we are seeing these open registration models where anybody in the world can actually join the course and participate in the interactions and actually contribute to enriching the learning experience, but they do not necessarily enroll for the course for certification purposes. It's a fascinating model, and I think we're going to see some very interesting things happen. The Polytechnic is Otago Polytechnic in New Zealand. You will see on the Wiki Educator homepage, just do a Google search for Wiki Educator, one word, there is a short case study a link from the homepage on WikiEducator. So the name is Otago Polytechnic. It's based in Dunedin, New Zealand. We have a link on the homepage to some interesting case studies at the institution. Yeah. I mean, I'm around for more questions if folk want to ask, but I don't want to impose that folk need to stay on. We've got things to do. Yeah. But I'm around for for more questions. Yeah.
Hi, Wayne. Thank you for offering to stick around for some more discussion. And thank you for giving your time to us today and providing such an in-depth exposure to WikiEducator. I know, I felt the same way as someone else did earlier in the text messaging. I don't know, but I'm feeling very motivated, and I'm sure I'm speaking for many people here, to get involved in WikiEducator. It was wonderful to get your perspective on it and see what's happening there. So thank you for that. And I also want to mention, I don't know if people have looked up at the screen there and can see, but because there was some really great discussion going on here today, Wayne wasn't able to get through some of the slides from the PowerPoint presentation. So that will be available on the CIDR site, and you can take a look at that. Okay? And finally, I'd just like to let everybody know about our next CIDR session, which will be a presentation from Anne-Marie Kokstra. She's with the Northern Alberta Institute of Technology right now, and she'll be discussing how teachers are learning informally on the job. And that presentation will take place on Wednesday, November 5th at 11 a.m., and I believe that's going to be Mountain Standard Time by that time. So hopefully we'll see everybody there. Thanks again for joining us, and if anyone has a few more discussions for Wayne, he is available.